Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is our weekly look at current events. As always, I'm joined by my excellent panel. From Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome to the program.
Simon, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to solving at least one of the world's problems today, and then next week maybe we can move up to two of the world's problems.
Okay, there is a vicious rumor during the rounds that you're writing a new book. Is that true?
Yes, thanks for the plug. Thank you. It's called Requiem for Casanova. It is in the final editing stage, and hopefully will come out the fall of 2014.
Perfect.
And I've gotten some very nice initial responses from some people who I really respect when it comes to looking at my grammar boo-boos, my typos, my character development, and seeing have all been very positive. So this is going to be a good one.
And from L.A., we have well-known and well-respected attorney Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you, Simon. Thank you, everyone. It's good to be back. And like Sam, I look forward to solving just one of the world's problems today, just one.
Peter, have you ever considered writing a book?
No, but I'm fascinated by Sam's title. I guess I have considered it, but I'm fascinated by Sam's title, Requiem for Casanova. That sounds somewhat autobiographical, Sam.
I would. All fiction is autobiographical. Don't let anybody ever kid you. Fiction,
well,
everything that you've ever read in any book has happened somewhere, someplace, sometime in the history of mankind. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to write about it.
I would love to read about the tales of a Casanova.
Yeah, well, no, as far as Requiem for Casanova, it is my satire take on the incredible success of the book Fifty Shades of Grey.
Oh.
So it's kind of like my take on that. That was one of the most successful books of the last couple of years. I think it sold more than J.K. Rowling, believe it or not. I don't know, but it was very, very highly successful. Spurned a bunch of sequels and a bunch of movies, and it was pornography. What do they call it? A lady's porn? I forget what they call it. Mommy porn. Mommy porn, they called it. I don't know. It was one of the and I started, and everyone was reading it. All these women were reading it. You know, my wife read it, my daughter read it, my workers. Everyone was reading it. And I was like, and I read a little bit of it, and they told me about it. And I said, I gotta do a man's version of this. And henceforth, that's what I came up with.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, and also from the L.A. area, we have the owner of Sunset Protection, the always colorful John Perry. John, welcome.
Hey, Simon. Entertaining show last week. I managed to listen to it. However, I did suffer some adverse effects, cotton mouth and the munchies. So I had to run over to Jack in the Box, get six tacos for $3, and almost mechanically over to the mobile for a big gulp Dr. Pepper and jumbo Snickers. So great show last week.
Okay, and John, yeah, before we get into the program, I'll ask you the question. You know, have you ever considered becoming an author? And I'd like to point out that Tolstoy has already written War and Peace.
Oh, I've considered it, Simon. First, I have to concern myself with the statute of limitations. And after appearing on your show, I was thinking of titling my autobiography Chronicles of Wasted Time.
Perfect.
Well, we don't want to take you away from those fast food tacos and that big gulp. That's living
that's
the
right.
American dream. That should be.
I'm prepared,
time.
Peter. I got them at the ready.
So there's lots of things to talk about today. Egypt, number one. Yeah, the Arab Spring seems to have failed. In fact, it's you know, more like you know, the Arab Arctic. In fact, not just Egypt, but the whole of the Middle East. It's become even more unstable than it was 10 years ago. Egypt, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, the list goes on. They're all disaster zones. You know, why are we even playing in the area? Sam, your thoughts?
Well, I have a question, and I want to hear what the three of you have to say. Is Egypt a blue Muslim state or a red Muslim state? I mean, I think we have to start looking at it like that. I am, you know, when I see the live on whatever we were all watching, whatever I was watching, I forget what network I was watching, you know, them coming into, you know, the army coming in to swoop in peacefully, people who were peacefully protesting, camped out and whatnot, and just say, and it looked like thousands were killed. And they said, gee, only 38 were killed. You know, I just think that they're lying about that, you know, the military. But I guess where I come from, guys, it's you know, I didn't like the Muslim Brotherhood. I've read some great, the greatest book I ever read about them was called The Looming Tower. I recommend that to anybody who wants to understand Egypt and why Nasser, Sadat, and Mubarak were strong men in Egypt and what it meant. The Looming Tower, obviously, about the 911 towers that were taken down. But anyway, the Muslim Brotherhood was democratically elected. Whether we like it or not, they were democratically elected. So are the Nazis, I mean, and some other people. And we just didn't get involved in overthrowing those governments. It's against our constitution. It's against the laws we stand for. Yet we have blood on our hands. The people in Washington have a lot of blood on their hands right now because we're sending billions and billions of dollars to this military regime that is killing people in the streets. So in a way, we're in a war again. Here we are again, nation building in a weird way, and I think that that's a bad thing.
I'm in agreement with you, Peter. Any thoughts on you know, the whole Middle East area, but particularly Egypt?
Wow, crisis in the Middle East, instability in the Middle East. This seems so unusual. You know, it's hard for me to imagine stability and non-crisis in the Middle East. You know, to me, it's just an intractable problem that's never really going to go away. There's always going to be feuding factions. Whoever you back, you're going to back a side that somebody's not happy with. And if you don't back somebody, then everybody hates you. And, you know, to me, it's just an unsolvable problem that's never going to quite go away. You can talk about it all you want, but this one is going to be on the to-do list forever, as far as I'm concerned.
John, your thoughts on Egypt?
Well, I just love it when Peter waxes satirical. I'm outraged by Sam's comment. He describes these peaceful protesters, omitting the fact that they burned 40 churches. Who's protecting the Christians there? And I think we should be back in the military, because there wouldn't have even been an election if Mubarak wasn't ousted. He was perfectly
wait a minute.
The country.
They're responding.
So that's what started this. And Sammy, you might be content with allowing the Muslim Brotherhood to burn every Christian church in the country.
They're striking out because their people are getting killed. They're striking back.
They believe
are the ones who have wronged them. You can't take the
well, how come they're not
that
burning
military is as corrupt as they come. They're without the United States, we are killing people indirectly in that country. Okay, and I'm not going to back to the Muslim Brotherhood.
I'm all for
killing
people who are burning churches. I'm for that.
What? They're burning churches because they don't. Because that's who they believe is behind the military killing their people.
They're justified, yeah, of course.
Would it be okay if they burnt down the pyramid? Would that be better? I mean, they're going to do something.
I'd be just as appalled. I don't think we should stand
by. It's okay for the military to go out and kill the Muslim Brotherhood. It's okay for them to kill children. I've seen little kids getting killed there, John.
Use them as human shields. That's their whole strategy, so people like you will be affected by
people
it.
Like me?
They don't care about democratically elected.
You can't, you neocons can't deal with the fact that America can't nation build and we should stay out of other people's countries. This is what happens.
Be crushed, and just like when the
Taliban... Yeah, I just think we're doing really good in Iraq, John. Two thumbs up. There's seven car bombings a day. There are hundreds of people being killed weekly. Oh, let's give two more thumbs up to the war in Afghanistan.
People probably turn when those 2,000-year-old Buddhas were exploded in the mountainside.
The what?
The 2,000-year-old Buddhas were exploded in the mountainside.
They have been... And Iraq's done great. Your boy Bush and Cheney did a wonderful job with that, and they lied to everybody. And we pulled out, look what's going on.
Saddam and his brood would still be raping.
I'd rather have Saddam
the
Hussein there than what we got now, because we're still going to be right back in there again. And it'd be 100,000 Americans still with their legs on.
They don't have a right
to exist. There'd be 7,000 Americans still alive.
So just annihilate them. We can't do anything.
Cool.
Let's just take our ball and go home and play some spades.
Well, because the world's a better, Iraq's a better place without Saddam Hussein. Don't you think so, Peter and Simon?
I think Iraq's a much better place now.
Iraq
is high on my list for place to visit on vacation.
and by the way, all the money that we spent there, it's come back in tenfold to America. Look how great Detroit is.
Right. Okay, what is really pissing me off is the fact that in Egypt, they're getting a $1.3 billion a year largesse from the U.S. and it's not a check that they can cash. It's credit card, if you will, that they can only use, to buy arms from, U.S. providers. This is stupid, stupid, stupid. But, the argument is, we could save $1.3 billion a year, but... we'll lose our only friend in the Arab world. Well, I don't view them as particularly friendly, but they don't like us. All they want are our, armaments and helicopters, stuff like that. Yeah, let them rot. Okay. Rant mode is now off. Let's ask John what he thinks about that.
I think I can take five books. Simon, what was that? I was playing a game of spades here, and I'm not sandbagging. Multitasking.
Okay.
What was your?
All right. We are giving Egypt a $1.3 billion a year credit card.
Mm-hmm.
However, the only place they can spend it, it's a bit like a gift card, is to buy U.S. Armaments. I mean, where's the sense in this?
Oh, cool, Trump. All right, Simon, I just had a spade. I'm all for that, as you know. It creates jobs. Mubarak was a great friend. You seem to ignore that. If he were in Egypt, none of this would be going on. We need allies there. What about the Suez Canal? What if that shut down? What's that going to do to the price of oil? Look at how dependent we are on OPEC. I mean, come on. How much do you guys want to pay for a tank of gas? Obama's not going to approve the Keystone Pipeline, so we got to import our oil. Simon,
I knew we'd blame Obama for this.
Of course. What did he do in Libya? And then he ousted Mubarak. Come on. How can you not?
Okay.
He didn't oust Mubarak.
He told him to leave. We should have stuck by him, and he'd still be in power, and we wouldn't be having this problem. He was a good ally, Sam. You know that.
Oh, yeah, and I think we should bring back the Shah.
Good ally to Israel.
The Shah was great, too. So was...
Exactly.
So, let me see, we should put the Shah back in Iran. John, when are you going to say no to nation building? It doesn't work. Now, we conquered the Taliban and should have left that country alone. We shouldn't have been, look, I got hoodwinked just like a lot of other people did about Saddam Hussein. I'm lucky that I'm damn lucky my son didn't get hurt, maimed, or killed over there, okay? But I'm also damn lucky to play the great game in America known as Monday morning quarterbacking. Well, I got hoodwinked that we had weapons of mass destruction in there. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. He was the leading cause of all the terrorism around the world, blah, 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 one of them, okay? Well, now my Monday morning quarterbacking says Saddam Hussein's dead, yet there's all sorts of terror. The Middle East is in worse shape. We're at a big Al Qaeda is not on the run. The mission isn't accomplished, and we're worse off today than we ever were.
Gone. There wasn't any problem until Mubarak was ousted.
There were problems with Mubarak. He just was a brutal dictator. I'm not for brutal dictators. Okay, brutal dictators lead to terrorism. Brutal dictators lead to all sorts of things happening. We have to free societies, and we don't stick our noses in other people's businesses. We should be ready to attack anybody who attacks us, absolutely. But we don't need to be spying on people. We need to be spending billions of dollars. But as Simon has pointed out, Egypt has to buy weapons from us because we make them buy weapons from us to prop up these industries that couldn't exist if it wasn't for a war economy. And the war economy is great for very few people, but the rest of the country is stinking it right now.
Well, I just disagree with you. I don't think we should be isolationist.
I didn't say we should be isolationist. We should be friends with everybody.
John,
I want a Cuban cigar. I can't get one. I want to be able to buy a Cuban cigar. I want to be able to do all that. If we're friends with everybody, that's what it would be. That would be good for economies. But, you know, and don't tell me, well, Cuba's a communist country because we borrow money from a communist country known China.
What does that
John,
have to do with it? Yeah, of course they're communist.
John, let me ask you a question. You're well-read.
Thanks,
so,
Simon. I haven't read Sam's book, though. I look forward to it.
I hope you love it. I might autograph it for you.
All right, John. Shut your trap just for a second. Right. Can you name one effort that the U.S. Has made, you know, in this nation-building idea that has actually worked?
Yeah, you ever heard of Western Europe after the big one?
Oh
that
God.
Really worked well. Cold War.
Yeah.
Yeah, how successful
was that?
Were destroyed. The Marshall Plan rebuilt them.
Wait a minute. You thought Korea worked? You thought Vietnam worked? You thought Western Europe? Okay, after the war, let me see. In Japan,
well, Korea
of course.
Was a half victory.
The only one country that probably benefited from a war was probably Japan.
Why? You're killing me, Sammy.
Hey, John, you really believe that? You believe that the Berlin Wall was a good thing? You believe the Cold War was a good thing?
Of course not.
Okay, it happened because why? America couldn't get their act because we couldn't stop the war economy. We lied. We said communism's a bad thing. We did. As a matter of fact, how many people's careers got ruined in Hollywood? How many people did we kill? How many we used our own people?
Really, educate yourself. Read some Robert Conquest if you think communism wasn't a bad thing.
Communism fell because it was as it was predicted was going to fall by its own means.
Solzhenitsyn.
Oh, yeah, we're still doing great because your boy Reagan spent us out of control and we put the national debt, started the debt clock going. Money, because it was all for the war economy, because all
your
real
cons fell. If it wasn't for him, there'd be a Berlin Wall.
He did not bring I'm
going to break in here. You know, much though I'm enjoying this, you know, I want to ask Peter his thoughts. If he's not giggling too loudly.
Oh, no, I'm not giggling. I find the debate fascinating. I really do. And I myself don't know, you know, what the right answers are. I really don't. I don't think it's a simple issue. I don't think that we can afford to just ignore everyone in the world, much as we would like to. It's like, how long can you ignore something before it you just simply can't ignore it anymore? You know, you consider someone like Saddam Hussein. I mean, you can let someone like that exist for as long as you can let them exist. But eventually it just becomes intolerable with some of these people.
But, Peter, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Okay, now, and I agree with you that Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator. I'm not going to deny that fact. Would the Shah of Iran any better?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, my uncle used to work for the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was a contractor in Iran before the fall. And much to my surprise, he had nothing but wonderful things to say about the Iranians and the Shah of Iran. So I honestly don't know.
He worked probably for the CIA?
He did. He was a contractor.
The CIA, who do you think put the Shah of Iran in power and kept
look,
him in power?
The short answer to your question is you're probably right.
Okay.
But it's not just a question. Unfortunately, we exist in an overlapping world, and for better or for worse, we have to form alliances and try to minimize enemies throughout the world because we're not the kind of people that other nations just ignore. You know, everybody loves us or hates us.
Okay, so I have no problem.
I don't know what I'm for, Sam.
I don't mean that. And I take back that phrase, okay?
Well, I appreciate it.
I look at China right now over the last 10 years. They don't have bases all over the world. We do.
Yeah.
Why are we the world's policemen and the world's moral compass, so to speak? And why do we have to say, this country, you have to have this type of government in? You can't have your type of government. You have to follow this religion. And you have to buy stuff from us. And you have to do this. And you have to do that. What gives us that right to do that?
Well, I'm not sure.
Please help me. I don't understand that.
Well, I'm not sure it's any type of right that gives us the right to do that. And I'm not sure it's about exercising moral rights. I think it's about a lot of things. I think it's about some mix of moral rights. I think it's also about politics. I think it's also about diplomacy. I think it's also about business and commerce. As John points out, you can't ignore the importance of oil in the economy, in the world economy, and the world's dependence on oil in one form or another.
Okay, and that's
I don't think it's any one thing. I think it's a mix.
So that's a good point, and John has a great point. So a smart government, a real capitalist society, would say, let's not just be dependent on oil. Let's develop nuclear, solar,
And I agree with that.
But we don't,
because
it's controlled by what? Big oil.
Well,
you're
right. That's changing. That's changing, but you're right. You're right. Big business has big oil companies have a fortune invested in it, and they've got their hands in many people's pockets, and they control political outcomes. But that is changing. It is changing
because it has to change. Look, I'm all for people. I want people to be – I want gas to be cheap. I also want to see people run on natural gas, and better public transportation and all that stuff. But you're right, Peter. If it's not big oil, it's big food.
That's why we have to stick our noses
in everything, because there's money to be made for the multinational corporation who own all the politicians of all the countries together. And that's what's going on. And John won't like this phrase, but most of us are economic slaves. We're in bondage.
Well, I think everyone, to a certain extent, is in economic servitude in one form or another. And I think a large part of what goes on is exactly what you say, Sam, but I just don't think it's the only thing. And as much as I think it would be wonderful to be able to ignore disputes and issues that arise throughout the world, I don't know if we really can. I don't know if it's really pragmatic.
I mean, again, again, this is Monday morning quarterbacking. I want to use that phrase. But when you look back, I'll give you a great example. Who was our ally? John, you're a history buff. Who was one of our biggest allies in Southeast Asia against the Japanese, not the Philippines, and he fought the brutal Japanese in Southeast Asia?
I don't know.
Ho Chi Minh? You don't believe that, do you? Simon, am I right?
You are entirely correct.
Ho Chi Minh ran a rebel hit-and-run force to fight the Japanese supply line, much like the Chinese did with the Flying Tigers over there and this and that to help out. What happens when he becomes the power? Because his hero was Mao, but he did fight the Japanese. We decide to put in Diem, most crooked guy of all time in Southeast Asia, and we assassinated him to put another one in there. But that's okay, right, John? Because we couldn't let South Vietnam fall. And
I'm sorry.
And I know you have a lot of friends, John, and I have friends with older brothers who died in Vietnam, okay, because a bunch of people were afraid of the domino effect. One of the biggest excuses to waste human tragedy is what went on over there. And look what's going on now. Over there, we're neither one of our business partners.
We read different books. What can I tell you?
You don't believe Ho Chi Minh was a freedom fighter against the Japanese, and we supplied
not
him,
at all.
And we supplied him with. Oh, jeez. I guess you do. We do read different books. You don't read the history books.
No, Sam, you've got to understand that John lives on a different planet.
I can't believe he doesn't know that. John, I'm amazed at that fact.
Well, the propaganda, I don't buy it.
Right. You don't buy
He was the first major find by the SETI organization, although they've yet to actually announce it.
Yeah, I mean, he was...
And for you to say economic slaves, it's a joke. You should talk to someone who's actually lived in a country where that type of economic system exists. It's really an insult.
What, communism?
I'm not
debating. But, John, I don't live there. I don't want to tell other
That's
people
why I'm
how
saying.
To live.
Those people are truly slaves. You have no idea.
Because
I know you haven't read about it. But
we have people in this country, the greatest democracy on the face of the earth, who live terribly. Come on.
Yeah, there's people still living behind electrified fences in North Korea their whole lives.
And we still have people who have smoked some marijuana and get 10 years in jail around here and live on hard labor. Come on. Well, you go tit for tat, John, anytime you want. This is non-
Hey, Peter, is that what you call a non-sequitur?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it all seems to overlap and connect in some sort of seamless way. It's very fascinating.
Where does it connect? Please, educate me.
I don't know. Sam's pointing out all the perceived injustices.
Have you been trying that liquid
marijuana? The what?
The liquid marijuana.
I know, what kind of marijuana?
Liquid. Simon knows about it.
Liquid marijuana?
Yeah.
I'd like to try it.
How does it work? Just a very brief footnote, and then we'll get back to our conversation.
Well, I'm not an expert, but somehow you breathe it, and I think it's laced with... PCP and something else, I don't know. But,
so you boil it or something and then inhale it?
There's some people who died on it recently.
Then it's not marijuana. It's some serious other synthetic drug, John, I would not want to try. Natural marijuana grown like by our man Muggs last Sunday, that'd be something I'd like to try.
Supposed to make you hallucinate, which I think you're suffering from.
Oh, I haven't heard that one since I fell off my dinosaur.
This is
hey,
a
Simon,
good one.
Just be glad you're not the object of this derision.
John, I can't believe you're that ignorant to history about, you know, and you're such a flag waver, you know, and I applaud your patriotism, but to be a real patriot, you have to be honest with yourselves. I mean, you know.
And we read different books. My favorite Vietnam books, real quick, When Hell Was in Session by Jeremiah Denton and 5 Years to Freedom by James Nick Rowe. I encourage people to read those.
My favorite book on Vietnam is The Pentagon Papers by Daniel Ellsberg.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
I guess it's a cure for insomnia. Yeah, read that.
All right. the point here is, you know, why are we spending so much money, you know, propping up our defense industry?
Well, Simon, you know, how long did Egypt keep the peace with Israel under Sadat and Mubarak? Look at it like that.
All right, that's a very good point.
That's money well spent to me.
John, let Israel defend Israel. You afraid Israel couldn't defend itself?
I don't want either country to go to war.
They've been going around for wars for centuries, and it's going to happen whether the United States is involved or not involved until one is left standing. I'm sorry. I'm not God, but that's the way it happens, and it's going to happen. Until people stop meddling and let them duke it out themselves, everyone's going to be involved.
Mubarak benefited greatly, but I don't see him as a brutal dictator like you.
Okay, that's fine. I think that's what the Arab world only understands. A lot of countries only understand brutal dictatorships. Sad. But I'm one of those guys. I kind of like this thing called the Constitution of the United States. I know you don't like it, but you know, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, and you know, not be spied upon and be ripped up. Due process of law. I mean, someone doesn't come to your house because you've written a column in a local newspaper criticizing Mubarak and waterboard you to death. And your family doesn't know where you go, or they stick you behind an electrified fence and no one knows where you went.
And the society is run by people like you. I'm a socially desirable element and a former person. You're right.
Yeah. So, that's that thing, due process of law. It's very important to me.
I believe in the Constitution. I'm a former person.
One of my favorite provisions.
Yeah. And then, John, you're for a guy like Mubarak because he backs up your side. You know, and your side is the war economy.
I think he's the best alternative for the region and the country.
Hey, John, do you like Dwight? Are you an Eisenhower fan?
No, I'm certain things. I have respect for him, but
why?
I don't like a lot of his policies.
You don't like Eisenhower because what his farewell address was, John?
Huh?
You don't like Eisenhower because he's one of your men, one of your guys who told the truth.
One of my guys. I wasn't even born yet.
No, but he's a Republican. He's a war guy.
Okay, right.
Okay. What did he say, John, that most Republicans still loathe to this day? They can't believe that Eisenhower traded on them. Beware the military-industrial complex.
That wasn't Obama
who said that, John.
That's successful anymore.
It's not successful. It's successful because we prop it up, as Simon has so eloquently pointed out, by giving Egypt a gift card.
Can I turn that into the car companies, too?
The what?
You want to turn the military-industrial complex into the car companies, too?
The military-industrial complex already is, John. They're bailed out daily by the American taxpayers, such as Simon has eloquently pointed out, with Egypt. How about Israel? Israel can't even sell other planes. They've developed a better plane than we have, believe it or not, and the American government won't let it sell it because that would be cutting into Grumman and all those other places. So they're not allowed to sell the better planes that they've developed.
Hey, Sam, much as I enjoy this, barring, to use a term Simon's familiar with, I think we're bogarting the airtime.
I'll be glad to take a step back.
All right. I'm just going to take a very quick straw poll, you know, like they do in Ohio. Peter, would you think that, you know, based on the fact that, you know, there's been a military coup, we should stop the $1.3 million per year in gift cards?
Well, I'm afraid that I think it's an oversimplification, and that I don't think we know quite what to do. And I think that that's going to be a debate that rages for a while, and we're going to have to sort it out, and we're going to have to see how things pan out in Egypt. And I just don't think it's an easy question with an easy answer. I think there are ramifications to everything we do, And I think as much as we try to remain isolated in the world, we can't. We got sucked into two world wars, not because we wanted to, but because we couldn't avoid them. And ever since then, we've had a policy of involvement with other nations around the world. And it just, it's not, I don't think it's an easy question that can be answered simply as a yay or a nay.
Okay. But I view you as pretty much a humanitarian.
Well, I do care about people, that's for sure. But
right.
And animals.
And I do care about animals, too. I do. I very much care about them. I think the way we treat all forms of life is ultimately a reflection on ourselves. Now, you know, I don't know. I think we all think that the best thing for these for Egypt is stability and what we would loosely call a peaceful democracy. But we as a nation, we're not born out of peace and democracy per se. We've had our own internal revolutions and our own internal wars and our own internal strife. And, we've waged blood with other nations, waged war and lost blood with other in conflicts with other nations, and we have done so within ourselves.
And we do it every Sunday.
Well, we exercise our free speeches. And, you know, I learn a lot. Listening to all these comments about issues that, quite frankly, I probably wouldn't spend too much time thinking about because I just don't think I can do anything about them. But I don't know what the right answers are. I honestly, truly don't know. It seems to me we need allies and we need supporters in that region of the world. And, we say things like, let them all work it out. I don't know what would happen if they all just worked it out. And when we were fighting in our civil war, European countries decided to, support one side or the other. They also decided, what would be best for a politically stable region. And it's all interconnected. I don't think it's possible to just say, well, what goes on there, that's their problem and it's not ours. But on the other hand, I do fear that there's a lot of self-interested motivation that goes into some of these decisions, the military-industrial complex, political expediency, putting money in people's pockets, and getting oneself reelected. And I view it all as a giant quagmire, and I honestly don't know what the solutions are.
Sam, one of the things that is bugging me it is our response to the situation in Egypt. Clearly, we don't want to get involved because of the relationship with Israel. And, it's an evil triangle, shall we say. I view it as, we in the U.S. have bought a friendship to protect Israel to a certain extent. Do you view it that way?
Are you asking me, Simon?
Yeah.
I really like Peter's answer. I mean, I think it is, as much as we like to think we can come up with some good solutions and whatnot on the show, it is a huge quagmire that a lot smarter men than I and women have tried to solve for years and nothing has happened. It seems to get worse, not better. And maybe it has to hit one of those things that has to hit rock bottom in order to get better. And I shudder to think what that rock bottom would be. I think Israel has gotten enough. Israel can stand on its own. I mean, I think it's, it's developed enough technology, that Iron Dome defense that it has with some help from the United States, I grant you that, and other countries is working. Rockets are falling a lot more harmlessly than they were before. I think that it is, it's funny right now. You don't hear the Muslim Brotherhood screaming about Benjamin Netanyahu. They're screaming about Morsi. You know what I mean? You don't hear the Syrian Hezbollah screaming about Benjamin Netanyahu. They're screaming about Assad. and the same all around there, they're all screaming about the people that they're not screaming at the Israelis or the they're screaming at us for not giving them bullets to fight their alleged bad guys, but they're not screaming at Israel, and I find that fascinating that I'm sure that Israel has even attacked convoys with weapons in them coming from Syria to Lebanon to aid Hezbollah, and Assad hasn't said anything because he's happy that the Israelis took out some of the rebels and whatnot, the alleged rebels, so I find that. But I just think Israel can defend itself. It's proven that since 1948, it could have annihilated the whole Arab army in the after the counterattacks in the Yom Kippur War, and they didn't. They were told not to by the United States. They were told, Nixon and Kissinger to stop that. Look what they did in the Six-Day War against an army 10 times bigger than them. And the Arabs still don't recognize the rights to the Israelis to do that. And, I think I think the Arabs, in my opinion, are more scared of a Israel armed to the teeth, pissed off at them, than they are what we see right now from the Obama administration, which is, I don't know what they're doing, one step backwards, two steps forwards, one step sideways. And I think they're pissing off everybody. They're doing a good job of that. And it's just going to play out. And we still have that one problem that everyone seems to – the drumbeat from Iran has stopped. And when the drums stop, you better be scared.
Oh, indeed. I say bring back the Shah.
John would like that.
I would. Reza Pahlavi.
Oh, hey, Peter, maybe John, just one side note. After the Iranian Revolution, I read somewhere, didn't a lot of the Iranians from the pro-Shah Iranians settle in Beverly Hills, or did I misread about that? Isn't there a strong Iranian presence in Los Angeles?
Yes.
There is.
In particular,
I read that somewhere, and I was fascinated by that.
In particular, Beverly Hills, yes.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that. I never knew that. I thought no one got out, so to speak.
Well, I don't. You asked me if there's a strong Iranian presence in the Los Angeles area, and the answer is definitely yes. And I do find it particularly concentrated in Beverly Hills, and they have a lot of money.
Okay.
And they're the source of constant litigation. They love to fight. And we have much litigation involving we refer to them as Persians, and that's how they refer to themselves, Persians.
Okay. I just read that somewhere, and I was and that's right. And they do consider themselves to Persian. They don't call themselves Iranians, right?
Well, I had a few years ago. I went to meet a client, and I took another lawyer with me. And he just took one look at me and he said, are these Persians? And I said, yes. And he just rolled his eyes up in his head because he knew that meant that this was just going to be, in terms of litigation, it's just a bloodbath. It's just everybody complaining and suing and asserting claims and everything you could imagine. So we see a lot of that litigation activity.
Okay, folks, I'm looking at the clock, and we've still got lots of time left, but I think we've beaten the Middle East into the dust. Let's move on. Somewhat closer to home, let's talk about the NSA. This week saw... yet more problems emerge. Snowden has released more information, and the NSA has decided to fess up that, we didn't quite tell the truth. this bothers me a great deal. John, you're a law and order kind of a guy. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, Simon, I know you strive to be fair and balanced, so could you describe me as a great humanitarian?
Oh,
like you did, Peter?
Always.
I do, yes. You're great humanitarian.
I found it entertaining. The NSA caught in one lie after the next. It's absurd to me. As I've said on the program, Sam and I are in agreement on this one. I think Snowden's a hero. Further revelations are to follow. And I never thought this country would actually rival the Stasi, which was the East German secret police, in terms of gathering information on the citizenry. I don't know what happened, but something's gone awry. And that agency's completely out of control with no oversight. So somebody needs to rein them in. I don't know who, but Sam, if you could work on that, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I will, John, but now that you've agreed with me, you're in big trouble, buddy.
Well, I know Rand
Paul is coming to get you.
He's trying to oversee him, but every time somebody goes to Congress, they either lie or take the fifth. So how can you oversee anybody if they're not going to tell you the truth?
That's the job of Congress, and they don't.
They're not getting any good info. How do you get good info if people refuse to speak to you or lie? I don't know what they can do.
You know what we need? You know what I think needs to happen? I don't know if it's going to, but since Simon has pointed out that we made a mistake, so to speak, in regards to, yes, we lied to you.
They said minor mistakes.
Yeah,
like computer
they blamed
generated,
it on,
right?
Didn't they blame it on, like, computer error, too?
They said it was a computer error, just the programming.
Yeah, so that's
but you know that's a lie.
Yeah, we know that's a lie. But you know what I'd like? They should actually have to release the stuff that they spied on. So let's say they spied on Peter Haven getting some very strange emails from a guy named Sam Murphy, right, Peter?
Boy, that would be awesome. I would love if they supervised those emails.
they should have to show what they actually oopsed on. And I think that would help. More Americans would then get outraged because we all know they've spied on, and I'm sure they've caught some legitimate terrorists and bad people. I'm not debating that.
I am. I don't think they've caught anybody.
You don't think they've caught anybody? Okay. All right.
No,
well,
I don't believe them.
Okay. And it's very hard to believe them. I agree with you, John. But let's say and I think that's a very small percentage of what they've spied on. But the vast majority of it is probably snooping into, and I believe this, the Kim Kardashian's email. I don't think they're any different than the paparazzi. I really believe that. I mean, I think that's what they spy on, and maybe they intend some of these people to blackmail people or to send stuff. I mean, look at that Jimmy Dean. What was the name? Who's the poor woman who said the N-word 100 years ago?
Paula Deen,
right? And they could find something on some famous celebrity or infamous celebrity, and they could literally blackmail that person. We don't know if that's going on right now, but I think that it's an abuse of power that Richard Nixon could only dream about. Richard Nixon would have wet dreams about this to control people and whatnot. And what's really scary to me is that, yeah, George Bush and the Republicans pushed us through to protect us, allegedly. But Barack Obama, the constitutional lawyer, the transparent Democrat, the man of the people, is the one who's made it even, has put it on steroids. And that, to me, is a real head-scratcher. I would think he dismantled us, but he hasn't. He's put it on steroids, and that boggled my mind.
Okay. But who's going to fix this, Sam? Let's assume that in 2016, it's a pretty unlikely event, but, you know, a GOP person takes the reins. Yeah. Are they going to fix it? Hell no. It's all big government.
Simon, it depends on the libertarian movement inside the Republican Party in the midterm elections in 2014. We'll have a lot to say on that. I think you can see, and we've talked about it a couple weeks ago, the war right now in the Republican Party is between Chris, I eat more Snickers than John Perry Christie, and Rand Paul. And I think whoever comes out with that, I think of Rand Paul and libertarians, and you see more and more people. There's a guy named Justin Amash, Thomas Massie, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee. And they get a more of a, if they get control of the Republican Party, I don't know, they might not. They all might get blasted by the establishment. Then I think your answer is yes, it's going to be more of the same. But if the libertarian wing of the Republican Party will work in a bipartisanship manner with some of the Democrats, who we've already seen who are against all this stuff too, such as Ron Wyden from Oregon, I think it will be dismantled, or at least be a check and balance on it better than we have now. I'm a little optimistic about that.
Okay, John, I'm sure you're chomping at the bit.
Wow.
Or just chomping on the Snickers bar.
I don't know. Sam was doing good there for a while. I don't know. That liquid marijuana is something. I don't understand why this guy Clapper is not facing charges. People say to Snowden, just come back, face charges, and man up.
Okay. I'm going to stop you right there. Right, you're doing a classic, John Perry. You're not addressing the question. You know, you seriously should consider becoming a politician.
Or you should drink more liquid marijuana.
Right.
I'm following in Carney's footsteps.
okay, John, I'm going to try and rein you in and... that's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah, try to pin me down, Simon. It's been tried before.
All right. Okay, so what you have to do is listen to the question and try and answer the question.
If Bob Shapiro couldn't pin me down, I'm not worried about you, but go ahead.
Look. Okay. All right, we're just going to try it. You know, it's... A trial run. It's not as if we're on air or anything. Do you think that the GOP is, if they get elected in 2016, are going to do anything to curb the things that are going on with the NSA?
Probably not.
Okay. See, that was easy.
Yeah. I'm not clairvoyant, but, all right. I hope I didn't disappoint you in your expectation.
Oh, no. But see how much easier that was. Rather than waffling on, all you had to say was probably not.
Well, I wanted to get in a poke at Sam, but go ahead.
Okay, now you can have your poke at Sam.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Thank you, Simon, for running blocking back for me.
I defer the rest of my time to the gentleman from Santa Monica.
Is that
what?
Is that me?
Yes.
Yeah, the balance of my time, Peter, if you could take it.
Yeah, well, I'm still not exactly sure what the so-called abuse really is, and there's obviously considerable debate over that. As far as checks and balances are concerned, obviously the first step is debating it and calling public attention to it. I think short of congressional activity and enactment of some type of legislation, and we all know how productive that is, it's going to take some sort of court action and possibly some case that gets brought that rises up to the Supreme Court level. But I'm still looking for the extent of harm and the amount of harm. And if it's just snooping into Kim Kardashian emails or even reading some of my emails, I'm not particularly troubled by it.
Peter,
and
let me from here with this. As I understand it, Jim Sensenbrenner wrote the Patriot Act. And as he explains it, it was meant to intercept communication with foreign nationals, like in foreign countries, not indigenous population, and it's being expanded to all of us now, which it was never intended for. There's the abuse. It's supposed to be communicating with foreign nationals, not fellow citizens.
Well, what if you have so-called U.S. citizens who are in fact international terrorists?
Well,
Haven't we seen this in Boston?
Yeah, if they're on the radar. It was originally developed was with foreigners, not U.S. citizens.
Well, we can talk all we want about who wrote a particular act and what their intent was, but it's my experience that these types of works, legislation, whatever they are, they're never the byproduct of just one human being. They're the byproduct of many human beings, and when they get enacted, they have language in them, and the language governs rather than the original intent or who wrote it. And if the language is there to support activities, arguably, then that's just the nature of legislation. And
you
it
mean
needs
the difference between a broad and strict interpretation?
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it. But when, you know, the normal rule of statutory construction is it's a plain and simple rule. We do what the law says. That's the first step. You read the law, you read the contract, you read the rule, and we try to avoid all this other extraneous inquiry. We just look at the words on the page. Now, that's never quite enough, but that's where it all starts. And then you fight about what words mean and what the intent was, and you branch out from there. But you start with the words on the page. And if the words on the page give someone arguably the authority to do something, there's always someone aggressive who's going to push that. And they'll tell you they're doing their job, and other people will tell you they're abusing their job. And it remains to be solved who's doing what. But I do find it hard to imagine that any particular legislation like the Patriot Act really has clear lines in it that say, well, here's where the buck stops.
The guy who wrote it says that, Sensenbrenner.
Well, he can say that all he wants, but the author of a bill, that's all he does. He writes it. After that, it's alive. It's a living, breathing thing, and he doesn't control its interpretation anymore. No more than a parent controls a full-grown child. And, that's just the nature of democracy and government and everything. That's why we write the words down. And there's always a committee and a group of people working together that carves out those words, and it's always a group of people who pass those words. And once they become enacted, it's nice that the author says, well, this is what I intended, but in many respects, that's like a parent saying, well, I never told my child to do that. And that's not determinative of our view of the child.
But isn't the author able to determine if his law is being abused?
Apparently not.
No,
apparently not. You know, we would have to look at the language. You know, we talked about this with respect to, you know, the IRS code. And if the author, has a particular view of a particular act, he's entitled to that view. You know, Roe versus Wade. I always forget whether the name of the woman was Roe or Wade. I forget. But, you know, she's flip-flopped several times over the course of the last decades about what her view on abortion is. She's entitled to change her mind. She's entitled to say what she believes. But in many respects, what she thinks is worth consideration, but it's not the final determination of how we view the law of the land.
But that's different. And so, she was a litigant.
She was a party litigant, and what you're telling me is this particular author had a particular intent and purpose, but no piece of legislation is a function of just one person. And I, you know, before I get into what his intent was or what anyone's intent was, I'd want to look at the words on the page. You know, we've had this discussion when we talk about the Second Amendment. And, when we talk about what those people wrote at the time and what we believe they intended to do, and that those are wildly debated terms now, just as all the terms in the Constitution are. I don't know what the answer is. I'd like to look at the words of the statute, but I suspect the words of the statute contain things like reasonable danger, imminent threat, reasonable cause to investigate something. Statutes always have these words of words of interpretation. Because, you know, if we could just write the words down and have everybody follow them, we wouldn't need anyone to interpret them for us. But we have to have bodies to investigate and interpretate what this amalgam of words means and how it gets applied. In theory, that's what the courts do.
Good Lord.
It's not what Persian litigants do in L.A.
I think you've just made John Perry go quiet.
No, I haven't made him go quiet. He's got another. There's another episode of Fox News on in an hour. He'll never respond.
Simon, I don't want to monopolize the airtime. I know Sam's just wanting to get in here. I certainly have a response, but I'd like to hear Sam or even your opinion, Simon.
You can go first.
No. After you, Sam.
First of all, Peter, I thought that was very well stated. I think when you use words like imminent danger and that, those are those elastic words that are put in there that are being interpreted by the people, not the author. I see what you're saying, John, that the author came out and said, whoa, wait a minute. It wasn't ever intended to be this way.
It's being abused. The law's being broken, yeah.
That's what he said, but I see what Peter's point is that, wait a minute, he wrote it.
Well, Peter's an attorney.
But he has the right things to say on it too. He's also looked at it from a legislative point a point of view too, and I thought that was very good. So that's what we do have is that we have these words, and that often did put those words in there, probably thinking they were only for national. He never realized that as the world turned.
Sam, you're breaking up really badly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's the NSA.
People,
don't need to worry. It's just the
can
NSA.
Can you hear me okay?
You're right.
Okay.
I thought it was a Snickers bar.
I think no, it was the NSA. The NSA is coming after me.
Chicken wings.
I think what happened, John, is I think that this guy did write it for X. He wanted it to be X, but the people in power have used the words that he wrote to turn it into ABC, and he doesn't like that. And
but, Sam, there's no justification, just like they're not calling what happened in Egypt a coup.
It's big government. Are you surprised? Are you surprised that Snowden's not a whistleblower? You know, in other generations, in other people's history, Snowden would have been a hero. In today's world, he is a traitor. Not by me. I think he's a hero and should be given a ticker tape parade, right? But he's not, because the big government and the institution are not really happy with what this guy did. And I think that the only answer is, let's see their oops. I want to see the 260,000 emails that they spied on that they said were a mistake. Show the American people what are the emails you were peeking in. Also, show the American people whose phones you were listening into. Then you'll see the debate go up to another level. Then you'll see a check and balance rise. If right now it's just a matter of people just – it's a ping-pong game. And the ping goes, well, we made a mistake. And then the pong goes, well, you better not do this anymore. And what are you to insure us? And my favorite was Obama said he was going to appoint a lawyer, the people's lawyer, to represent the people in this top-secret court that no one's allowed to see.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the fact that I – you know, to me, Mubarak, the Shah of Iran – communism, Nazism, fascism, they had secret courts. How the hell did the American people did they put up with a secret court? I just boggled my mind.
I'm gonna apply for admission now that I just found out about this job opening. Thank you.
Right. Okay. All right.
Peter, I'll write your resume, I'll write your letter of recommendation, but you know what that's gonna do for you.
Well, you write the recommendation, send it to me with the subject line, NSA do not read, and it'll get read. It'll be perfect.
Okay, here is the big question. You know, why on earth do we even have this secret court, the whole Pfizer and Fisk deal? I mean, where's the checks and balances? Because I sure don't see any.
Well, I suppose that that's directed my way.
Yes.
But, you know, there have to be tribunals in place at some level to oversee some of these decisions. Sometimes there aren't. Sometimes there is no oversight court at all. Some things fall into the realm of pure executive decision or administrative decision, and nobody oversees that at all. And apparently, in connection with some of these national security acts, there are courts that preside over this stuff, and you can at least see the theory for why some of these courts exist, because if this is secret, sensitive information, and if we have people in government who are constantly who represent threats of leaking information, and if there's a belief that, you know, a court needs to make a decision or someone needs to make a decision regarding the appropriateness of conduct, there needs to be some court that can do that, and presumably that court has to have protections, because what we're dealing with here is supposedly confidential or sensitive or what have you. And, you know, we see this in a regular court. Sometimes somebody will fight in a regular lawsuit over whether or not something's private, and it turns into a big dispute, and one side doesn't want to produce the information. One side says, I don't want to produce the information because it's super-duper secret and sensitive. And the other side raises all the arguments that other people say, which is that it's not super-duper secret and sensitive. Produce it. And sometimes, as part of the resolution, the court that's presiding over this dispute will say, you know what? Give me the stuff. I'm going to go in the back here, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to make a decision about whether or not it's super-duper secret or confidential. And that can happen. The court will just look at it. Nobody's overseeing that judge. Nobody's seeing it. If he comes out and he says, well, you know, I think these records are not confidential and they're going to get produced, and the other records, I think they are confidential, so they're not going to produce them. And nobody ever gets to see what he looked at. Because at some point, the process requires someone to be able to do that. Otherwise, we get bogged down and we can never do anything, and we can never have any measure of oversight at all.
Okay, so let's pick Sam as the victim here. You know, someone goes to the NSA and says, hey, I think Sam Moffey is a real threat. You know, he sells 20 cent wings. You know, so you know, we want to you know, tap his phones. You know, see what he's looking at. You know, on his computer. But no one tells Sam about this. That doesn't sound right. Yeah, Sam, you wouldn't like it, would you? I mean,
no.
Your secret sauce recipe might get leaked.
I just think, you know, I just believe in due process of law. That's all. I don't think we have it. I you know, the fact that there's, and we only know. And I think the scary part of this whole thing with the NSA, we only know the tip of the iceberg. I think, you know, we only know a little of what Snowden, he hasn't leaked out everything. There's been so that scares you too, knowing
right.
That there's more out there. And I know that there was a vote to curtail the NSA, and it didn't pass. Both Republicans and Democrats were against it, and both the Democrats and Republicans were for it. And the ones that are for it are all part of the status quo, the ruling class, the elitist class that needs to go. Because, and I think that's the, you know, that was to answer your question from about 20 minutes ago, what is the damn check and balance? And it is to get rid of the status quo that wants people to be spied upon, that is happy that there's a government agency out there that I don't even know where it's located, is spying on all of us. It's spying on my emails, on Peter's emails, on John's emails, and manipulating things if they want to. I mean, they can really, you know, if we've all seen some of those Hollywood movies that obviously I used to think was, oh, there's no way that happens. The one that really pops into my mind, and I think the NSA would probably learn from it, was one with Gene Hackman and Will Smith, Enemy of the State. I don't know if any of you all saw that. I encourage you to see that, especially you, John Perry. And you should see the powers that the government has to spy on people. And how they can manipulate a situation where a guy who was a good guy in this case, they turned him into a bad guy. And he really wasn't, and all that. And I don't think that's just all Hollywood speak. I think they could do that to a candidate running for office, so to speak. They could ruin somebody. Think of the stuff that they could find about all of us that we don't want to come out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Peter, you know some, right? I mean, maybe it could hurt your business. John, myself, Simon, you know, we don't want a lot of this stuff to come out, but they have access to it. And we have all been innocents. You know, it's like the slaughter of the innocent. I innocently used my computer. I never thought anybody was spying on me. I never in my wildest dreams thought that. I thought that you know, that would protect it. You know, no one eavesdrops on my phone call. I'm not doing anything wrong. But they are. And it's scary.
Right. Well, you know, if you, you know, play in the arena of writing news stories, it's even more concerning.
Yeah, like you.
Right.
Yeah,
I will do, you know, strange searches, which, you know, I'm sure pop up on their radar. But, you know, it's not because, you know, I want to build a bomb. It's more, I need the background for the story I'm going to write. And, you know, is there a way that they filter that out?
You know, I think the short answer to your question is yes. I think there is a way. I'm not saying they're not going to, that if you, you know, after that Boston attack, when I read about making a bomb with a crock pot, I immediately started doing internet searches on that. When I came across that, you know, that so-called terrorist webpage that teaches you how to do it, and I came across all kinds of information. Now, I don't know if that activity, if there's some software program out there that basically detects when people start doing those kinds of internet searches. I don't know. But I think what it's probably designed to detect or concentrate on are repetitive type searches or searches that sustain themselves in a kind of systematic way over a period of time. Because otherwise, I mean, you're really chasing needles in haystacks. You're really, you know, anybody could just run random searches at random times, and then suddenly that's going to trigger scrutiny or investigation. I just can't see that happening. I don't care how big government is. I don't think they have enough time to do that. But maybe I'm wrong. I have no idea.
Okay, I'm going to change the subject yet again. That there's been lots of grumbling on the news channels that September Congress may indeed shut down the you know, government, and it's all over Obamacare. You know that they've, you know, the GOP's you know, voted on it what 40 times. But this time, they could seriously cripple things. Who should I pick on? John.
Simon.
Do you think they're going to, you know, the Republicans are going to, you know, create a situation where that there isn't funding and, you know, the government shuts down?
Those damn Republicans sabotaging Obama's utopia. A couple things. Sam, you like historical references. Those judges in those courts make Roland Freisler look independent.
Look
him up. You'll get a good laugh. But, Simon, to your question, It's going to come down to strategy. I don't know. Personally, I hope they don't, because they're going to get blamed by the media and academia. And I think they should just let the program go through, because it's a complete failure. But it could be an entertaining September through the fall if they do shut it down, because that's going to give Obama a fallback position. He can claim this thing would have worked given the opportunity. So, like Sam said, there's greater minds than mine working on this now, and I hope Karl Rove comes up with something.
And Sam, do you have any thoughts on this?
You know, there's a bunch of morons running the Republican Party right now. You know, we know that. 30 times they voted to stop Obamacare, to defund it.
Say that, Sam?
Because it's better than the law of the land, John. We argued about this last week.
Wow.
The Supreme Court made it the law of the land. Both parties and everyone should be working together to get all the shit out of it and put nothing but good things into it to the best of their ability. And if they can't, then they need to stand up and say, guess what, guys? This thing stinks. We've all tried to do it. It's been bipartisan. The Republican, that's the way government's supposed to work. It doesn't. I understand that. Okay? But if they go to defund government, you're right, John, it'll be a public relations disaster, so they can't do that. And I agree with you on that one. But I think the way to do it is, you know, I've heard people, doctors, well, that's who I got to listen to on this, say it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I've had other doctors say it's the worst thing it's the worst thing ever invented. I don't know what it's going to be. But I think it needs to, I think they got to let it shake out and hope that it works. And because I believe in national health care for all. It's something that should have happened a long time ago. I don't think Obamacare is the right answer, because there definitely needs to be something that ensures people get health care.
So you're for a single-payer system?
I don't want a single-payer system. I want competition, but I want the government involved.
But if everybody's going to be covered, right?
Well, no. If the government put in the – first of all, John, I do agree with you 100%. I don't want the IRS telling me about health care.
Single-payer system exempting Congress. They get their own plan.
Well, we know that, and that's a pain in the ass.
Oh,
anything that exempts Congress, I'm against, okay? they did that. And listen, that shows you how much they didn't read their own bill.
Right. They don't want to be subject to it.
Well, no, because Obama had to come in and give them another exemption.
Right. Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. Everybody gets an exemption but the little guy.
Of course. And that's the way the American system's worked for hundreds of years. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But, I do think that we do need national health. My wife's from Holland. Her family's from Holland. Their system works. They didn't have to invent. We don't have to invent the wheel. We can improve on the wheel. So why not go to what they do in Holland? And it works wonderfully for everybody there. In this country.
Sammy, you want the people at DMV and the post office running health care?
I do not want the government running anything but what they're supposed to, constitutionally supposed to. By the way, John, the post office is a constitutional thing. Did you know that?
Yeah, but the people there aren't exactly motivated employees.
Well, because
I know, and that's the people
you're comparing apples and oranges. We're talking about Obamacare.
So
okay,
Sam, you have to realize that you're talking with John. He can't stay on a single subject.
I'm a great humanitarian.
No, that's Peter. I think, John, yes, I don't want the government involved in a lot of things in my life, but I also realize you have to have we are a nation of laws, and a government, you have to have that. A government that, and the government does
do be involved
good
in your health care.
The government should not be in health care, but it should be involved in it.
Not your taxes.
I don't want the department. I don't want. Listen, John. I don't like the Department of Education that your boy Ronnie Reagan stuck us with, because it ruined public education. Well, let's say Reagan was against public education. Your boy Reagan gave us the Department of Education. Wasn't he against the government?
I don't even remember that. But
Simon, help me.
Go with it.
Okay. Sam, you have to remember that. Yeah, John has selective memory.
Well, he thinks Ho Chi Minh was fighting with Tojo.
Right.
Now I see he was a non-entity.
Right.
So, it was always a part of the Russians.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Russians were our enemies in World War II. I forgot.
Oh,
thanks.
Look.
They were
he managed to change the subject yet again.
All right, I'll shut up. Go ahead, Simon.
It's Peter's turn.
Okay, Peter.
Well, you know, it seems to me that Obamacare has just become a phrase that people use as a matter of partisan politics, and no one's even talking about what the substantive issues with it are. And to the extent there are substantive issues with it, it's become the law of the land, and it's survived scrutiny. So if somebody wants to filibuster and shut down Congress over this issue, that's their political right to do so. But John's right. That would be a political Waterloo. That would backfire for the Republican Party. That would be, in my opinion, a misguided step. And if they want to do it, go right ahead. Most Americans won't even pay attention in September unless somehow the NFL football coverage is impaired by this. And but if the government shuts down and that starts affecting people, then there'll be an immediate uproar, and whoever was responsible for that will get blamed for it. And it'll be a disaster.
But let's think about that. If the government shuts down,
it's not going to happen.
People that are going to get affected are Northrop Grumman and you know, companies like that.
Well, you speak about that as if that's just that end of the swimming pool that gets affected, you know, the deep end. That's going to affect the whole pool. It'll trickle down one way or another.
You reckon?
Yes.
Okay. What happened with that great sequester deal? You know, the big bun fight. Have you seen any direct fallout?
Me? Have I seen any direct fallout? No, I haven't seen any direct fallout. I'm not even sure I know what you're talking about, I'm sorry to say. I must profess my ignorance. What sequester fight are we referring to?
Okay, Sam, you follow politics a lot. Yeah, the sequester, bunch of things were unfunded. Have you seen any real direct consequences?
I haven't experienced anything. I think there's been some people I know who work for the government who have been on some furloughs here and there, and bitch and moan about it. But as my wife likes to point out, though, I was on a furlough. I personally believe that most of these government workers who've been on furloughs for a day, like every 3 weeks, they have to take a day off. When we're not looking, at some time in the future, they'll all get their money back through some act of Congress that will say, any of these people who were affected by the sequester, you're now going to get a pay raise, or you'll get an extra day paid vacation. Or whatever.
They let them work overtime, Sam.
They don't know what overtime is, John.
Oh.
Unless they're abusing it, and that's usually on the local level. So that's going to happen. No, it hasn't been affected. Remember, I think we talked about this back at the beginning of the year, when the MSNBC crowd was banging the drum that the sequester's coming, and the world's going to fall apart. It hasn't, has it?
No.
Yeah, they were saying the airports are going to be delayed and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger issue is the debt ceiling issue that's coming up again, believe it or not, gang. And
right.
I think that's got to be a bigger issue that has to be done. And that's more important than shutting down. There'll be another continuing resolution, and both sides will saber rattle, and the American people will continue to suffer, and that's what's going to happen. And it's sad but true. I mean, until there's a real changes in Washington, D.C., that has a trickle-down effect to our state governments, our county governments, and our local governments, expect more of the same.
But, Sam, let me ask something real quick. You're a libertarian, yet you're for national health care. Does that seem paradoxical to you?
John, let me explain that. I think Peter says it's easy to throw out phrases. Obamacare is an easy thing to throw out because it's a brainer. I believe everybody should have the right to get healthy, John, and see a doctor or something. And I would not mind paying into a system if I knew it wasn't going to be run by the government to be corrupt and whatnot, because I've seen people who can't get health care. I see people whose teeth are falling out, and it bothers me, and they paid into it, and they can't afford to get health care. And I'm not saying that there has to be some sort of safety net for everybody. And I don't mind paying a few bucks into that if it's going to help someone go see a doctor and get a shot or something of that nature, because it bothers me that a lot of people don't have that. And I'm not saying illegal immigrants. I don't want to throw these political buzzwords into it, John. I am a libertarian, and I'm proud of that. I'm also a libertarian who believes that I don't mind paying my fair share if it's going to better my society, because the better my society is, the better my culture is going to be, and the better it's going to be for my children and my grandchildren. So,
and you don't mind forcing other people who don't share your belief to contribute as well, right?
Oh, I would think their lives would be better too, John, and maybe they'd learn and they'd do something, you know, and they would see that working, you know, is a better thing, and they're contributing to a good thing, and then they have to put it, and maybe if those little people on welfare and they have to give up a third of their funds in order to get health care, that they may have to go out and get a part-time job or something to supplement the money that was being given to them by a very generous society. And I think that has to happen too. That they don't get a free pass at all, but people deserve. We have to have a safety net for healthcare because it's too important. Too many people get sick and they die, and you read about them all the time, and no one was there to help them, and it bothers me. And if we spend more money on military hardware or things of that nature than we do on taking care of our own, and I get that. If that makes me a socialist, then I'm proud to be a socialist about that, John.
What could $1.3 billion do, for the homeland, rather than sending it to Egypt?
John,
try and be sensible. I know it's
tough
for you. All right. $1.3 billion, funneled into, the homeland, rather than supporting, defense contractors. I think $1.3 billion could actually do quite a lot. But wouldn't you agree, Sam?
Yes, I think we could do a lot more. You know, I would hire Peter Haven as my lawyer with that $1.3 billion to go fight the fight against all the evil out there.
And
he'd file all sorts of lawsuits, and we'd be able to hack it out in court.
Our motto would be due process of law.
Yes, I think the money could go to better things, but it's not just the Egyptian stuff. It's a lot of, I believe there's enough money in the world to solve all the problems. It just doesn't get to where it's supposed to go because there's a lot of sticky fingers in between.
For what it's worth, $1.3 billion is about the same value as the average NFL football team, which I find very fascinating.
Yeah.
We're talking... That's about the average value of a team in the NFL, probably the same in Major League Baseball. So we're talking about the value of a professional sports team. That's what $1.3 billion is. To me, $1.3 billion seems like a ton of money. It is. But when you say to yourself it's the value of a sports franchise, a Major League sports franchise in America, for some reason it makes it seem like a small amount of money when I think about it in those terms.
Okay, doing some quick calculations, there's, 340 million people in the U.S., so, when you divide it that way, it's not a lot of money. But
that's a good chunk of change. If you gave if you gave every American a proportionate share of $1.3 billion, everybody would take that check.
Right, but you know, at least you're you know, spending the money, you know, to help the people, you know, as opposed to help your enemies, you know, arm themselves.
Well, I guess that begs the question of whether or not we believe we're helping our enemies arm themselves. I guess that's a fundamental question right there.
It's a good question, and we're almost completely flat out of time. So I'm going to go round the table and get everyone's parting thoughts. I'll start with John Perry, because I'm sure he has something interesting to tell us.
Not especially, Simon, but I want to say, Sam, I enjoyed the robust debate. I still love you. Hope you guys have a good week. And as always, Simon, my best to Jan.
Perfect. Yeah, John, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you guys. Take care.
All right. And Sam.
Yes. John, I really enjoyed debating with you. It was very good. That's what makes America a great place. That's what makes this show great. And I'm very, like Peter said very earlier, there's things I talk about and listen and learn I would never be doing on a Sunday afternoon. And so that's, for personally, it's a great educational and very stimulating to me to be a part of this. And I thank you all. And I hope we solve something today. You know, we don't try to kick the can down the road. We try to take an issue head on and work with it, and I appreciate the opportunity. And John, next, your homework assignment is to come up with the blue Muslim states and the red Muslim states for next Sunday.
Oh, I love it. And Peter.
Well, I'm glad that Sam brought up the blue Muslim states and the red Muslim states, because all I could think is they're all just various shades of red. Yep, I don't know if we finally solved an issue today, but that just means we're going to have two for one next week. We've got to solve two next week. And it's a pleasure to I enjoyed listening to Sam and John debate today. That was fantastic. I hope to hear that again next week.
Oh, you can guarantee it. I've been, you know, listening to Sam and John debate over the months. Actually, it's more like over the years. And, you know, they used to be a firm friendship. They agreed on everything. But these days, yeah, they're just out for blood.
Sam's gone astray.
John had been sending me these Snicker bars that I ate for the years previously, and I ran out of them, and all of a sudden I realized that he's full of you-know-what.
Okay, folks, I do need to wrap this up. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for taking part in the program today, and hopefully we can do it again next Sunday, same bat channel, same bat time. See you all later. Goodbye.